Well, we got the NBA training camp starting in just a couple of days. You just heard on a sports update, Frank Isola from the Daily News saying that they expect Carmelo to be gone, traded by Monday. That thing's been a mess the whole summer. I mean, it's just been an absolute mess. The Knicks are a mess, and the Knicks were a mess with Carmelo Anthony, and they were a mess without Carmelo Anthony.
You know, Grant, I don't know why you would put a date on it like that. In my opinion, you would think that with all the teams in the NBA, you would kind of screw yourself if you start putting it out there. I would try to keep that quiet, and when it happened, it happened. I would say it's a mess, and I would say eventually he gets out of there. Monday, I don't know.
Well, what a mess the Knicks are. Seriously. They're just what a disaster.
Yeah, and no direction as of right yet that you really see a definite direction, because the young guy, Frank Ntilikina, yeah, that they drafted was drafted by Phil Jackson. And now you have a new general manager, which tells me that the direction probably has changed, which might not mesh with him.
Yeah, and listen, you don't know whether Frank Ntilikina can play or not. It's going to be a while. I will say this. I'm cautioning everyone with this statement. If you just go by what we saw in summer league with Dennis Smith Jr. from Dallas, it looks like they took the wrong guy.
Yeah, I would say so.
And but again,
Yes, you got to give him a chance, and you pair that with Tim Hardaway Jr.'s $70+ million contract,
which is ridiculous.
Well, you already had him, and then you traded
exactly
him,
right.
And now you so direction wise, I don't know what the Knicks are doing.
All right. As you heard, Willie Cauley-Stein is going to be in studio in about an hour, so we look forward to talking with him. You and I have watched this team work out off and on over the last couple of weeks. He's been at every single workout. He's here voluntarily. He's putting in the work. He looks like he is ready to go.
I am truly, truly impressed with Willie. You know, I follow him on social media, so I saw him in Vietnam and China,
yep,
and different things, and I'm thinking, okay, what type of work is he putting in? But he has obviously been putting in some work, because what I'm seeing from him down there, I am impressed with. You mentioned the fact that he's here and he doesn't have to be here speaks to leadership in a lot of different things.
All right, 49ers at home tomorrow as they try to bounce back from a close game and a close loss in Seattle. They will host the Rams tomorrow, Thursday Night Football. And, you know, again, you look at the way the Niners defense has played. You look at the games last year with the Rams. You just kind of figure this is going to be a low-scoring game tomorrow night.
Most likely, Grant. You got Eric Reed out, Tart questionable, Reuben Foster out. So defensively, you don't know. I would say probably low scoring, but I would say that I'm a little bit interested to see, because you got two guys when you look at the coach, Sean McVay, and then Kyle Shanahan, obviously. And you got Jared Goff. So you got the youth maybe of the NFC West. When I say youth, these young teams that might be up and coming.
When I look at what we've seen, and I think this is going to continue for another week, and then we'll see the cobwebs come out and come off in week four, due to the fact that the NFL preseason is such a joke and so few players play. You're seeing the offense really suffering around the NFL. All right, you're seeing scoring for the most part way down in a sport in which they have changed the rules to encourage more scoring, but you're not seeing it right now. You're seeing low-scoring games. You're seeing a lot of subpar offensive games. And that will change here as we get now into the third and fourth weeks.
You know, you said this last year, and this is really my first year watching football the way I'm watching it now on this side of the desk with you. And I was like, you know, I mean, how long is it going to take you to kind of get into an offensive flow? But now I look at Seattle. Now, that could be some that you were aging and a lot of different things. But that has kind of been our MO, start out slow. And I think that you see a lot of timing issues and different things like that. And if you don't have a great offensive line, there has to be a way that you start to find your rhythm. Seattle's done it with a faster pace offense in the second half, and that seems to work. I think that New York will probably end up, the Giants will obviously probably end up doing that as well.
I mean, you look at a game like Miami and San Diego,
mm-hmm,
you know, 19-17, played in beautiful weather. Neither team would have what you would say a stout defense, all right? The Panthers and the Bills, again, 9-3 was the final score. You know, you look at you know, the Cardinals and the Colts, all right? You know, 16-13.
Yeah.
You know, there were some teams that scored. You're always going to have the Patriots seemingly score. You're going to have the Saints score. They combined for 56 points. You know, the Minnesota Vikings scored 9 points last week in their loss. The Bears scored 7 points in their loss. You know, the Browns scored 10 points. The Giants scored 10 points. The 49ers and the Seahawks, it was 12-9. Just, you know, again, and I'm not saying that the teams that I just mentioned are all, you know, offensive juggernauts, but you expect more scoring, especially with the way the rules are. And you're also seeing, and this is not just the Giants the other night, and it's not just the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of teams right now in the NFL, and I want to talk with Chris Landry about this a little bit later in the show, where you look at their offensive lines and it just leaves you scratching your head saying, how could their offensive lines be that bad?
You know, it's funny that you say that and you say it that way, Grant, because I heard Pete Carroll say after the first game that the Seahawks played, he said, I really expected more. I've seen more in training camp and I expected more out of them. So maybe they're seeing something that they're not able to produce on the field. But if I know that I either with New York Giants, I don't have a mobile quarterback, I got to protect him. And if I do have a mobile quarterback in Russell Wilson, but I don't want him to get hurt, I got to protect him. So you think the emphasis in the coaching when you talk about left guard, left tackle Flowers in New York, that you would see that he's not able to do what you need him to do before you throw him out there.
I mean, the Seahawks have scored 21 points in two games.
Oh, my goodness, man. And this is 2 years in a row.
Right.
It's same exact score.
It's a carbon copy of the way they started off last year. They were 1-1 last year. They're 1-1 this year. They were very fortunate last year to win the first game against Miami.
Yep.
I think they were very fortunate to beat San Francisco. So it's almost an absolute mirror image from what we saw in 2016. And then if you look at what the Seahawks did, all right, and again, we're talking about an offensive line that was aligned. Then what happened, Maline? What happened after that? They won three straight games, including a game against the Atlanta Falcons, 26-24.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember that game, there was a horrible call.
There was. Pass interference,
right.
I remember.
All right.
But it
but,
wasn't
but again,
pass
the point is they competed with Atlanta who
yes.
went to the Super Bowl. And then they went on another three-game winning streak, if you remember. And in that three-game winning streak was a very impressive road win at New England.
Yes, sir.
Okay? Where they put 31 points on the board. So here's the point I'm trying to make. Last year, the Seahawks scored 12 points and 3 points in the first two games.
Goodness gracious.
Less than this year.
Yeah.
But then what happened? They scored
37. Yep.
They scored 27 and 26. And what I'm trying to say here is teams that you know, or at least you think
are good. Right.
Generally speaking, week three is when you should start looking like yourself, all right?
Yes, now, and I'm hoping so.
And now the Seahawks are going to have the same offensive line this week.
Right.
The Giants are going to have the same offensive line this week.
Unless they do something with Flowers.
Well, they should. But my point is, the Packers, I can go on and on, but you're going to see the scoring go up this week.
Yeah, you said this about the defenses being further along, and now that I'm watching and now that I'm a greater understanding of how that part of it works, you're spot on. You want to make sure that these guys are healthy, that they're able to play, and that takes a second for them to get the rhythm, especially, Grant, when you're talking about, you know, five-step drop, get the ball out, or even a shorter drop, get the ball out, real quick slant routes and things like that. When you look at Odell Beckham, that's probably his best play is the slant route and yards after the catch.
That's true. That's very true. But you see, if you're playing against the Giants right now, you're going to take that away
right.
because you know that the Giants offensive line is not able to protect Eli well enough for him to get the ball down the field. So if you're playing against Odell Beckham and his great speed, you're going, you know what? I'm going to take away that slant. If he gets behind me, I'm not so sure the quarterback's going to have enough time to throw the ball that far down the field.
So in your opinion, what is the solution there besides, obviously, a better offensive line, which you're not going to be able to get right away?
You got to max protect. And what that means is you've got to keep a back end and or a tight end to help with that tackle, which means you have one less guy to throw the football to. But if you have Odell Beckham, if you have Sterling Shepard, if you have Marshall, and Shane Vereen's very good coming out of the backfield, if you can give Eli one extra count, he should. Now, understand, he should be able to get the ball to those guys.
I would think so. And that's whether you're going to chip block for him, however you're going to help Flowers. but allow those guys to run some routes, get down the field. And he should have three or four options with a tight end dumping to somebody that you're right. Probably week three, week four, you start to see that happen.
The problem in the NFL, and it's very similar to the NBA. You know, we always talk about in the NBA, you're like, gee, how did that team, like, I'll give you an example. Toronto Raptors over the last few years have been a much better team than Sacramento.
Yes.
But Sacramento beats them every year.
Every year.
All right? It's about matchups.
Yes.
It's about matchups.
It totally is.
All right, the NFL is about matchups. Now, if I'm looking at this week, okay, and since everyone's I'm not just saying this because I'm a Giants fan, but they're in the news a lot because of how bad their offensive line is. I look at matchups in the NFL, and if I'm looking for the Giants to get a win, I wouldn't want them going into Philadelphia looking for the win. You know why? The Eagles have 11 sacks in two games.
Oof.
All right.
Really?
So if I'm looking at this game, if you're going to talk about matchups in the NFL, I'm looking at a team in the Philadelphia Eagles that played very well on the road in week one,
right?
A divisional game, and they beat the Washington Redskins. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Then in week two, they played a very strong game in one of the more difficult places to play in the National Football League, and that happened to be at Arrowhead Stadium. And it was 27-20, and you know what?
They played
pretty darn well.
They did.
All right? But I'm looking at this team that has double-digit sacks already going against this offensive line. This game is one of those games where it almost looks too easy to pick, like you're saying, there's just no way the Giants can win.
But it's divisional.
You know, it's a divisional game. So that generally means it's going to be close. And the Eagles should win this game. They should win this game because of the matchups and their defensive front. And here's the other thing. Where we talk about teams not scoring, hasn't been a problem for Philadelphia.
No.
They put 30 points on the board in week one. And on the road, all right, on the road, they scored 20 points at Kansas City. So that has not been a problem. And their defense should, and again, I underline, should just give the Giants absolute fits because of the way they get to the quarterback.
The question that I asked you about the solution, I would say that there's not a more perfect game for them to figure it out with a team that's got 11 sacks in two games. Can we figure it out? This is probably the Giants' chance to figure that out, get the ball out quickly. And also, when you look at the Giants and what they did in week one compared to week two, there is a difference when Odell's on the field, whether he's productive or
Correct.
Not. It opens things up in a different way. And with that being his first game, I would expect more out of the Giants this week.
Now, when I look at a team like the Raiders, okay?
Yep.
We know they can score.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going on the road against Washington at Sunday Night Football. I don't have a real good read on Washington because last year they started off very poorly. They lost their first two games, went on the road against the Giants, and again, not blaming the officials, but there were some horrendous calls in that game which turned out to be incorrect calls, which turned the stem of that, the tide of that game. And not only did Washington win that game, it catapulted them into a pretty good season. They had a chance to go into the playoffs, but they lost in week 17 at home.
Yep. Right.
Now they go home 1-1. They're going home to take on the Raiders. The Raiders are a better football team.
Oh, yeah, they are.
They are a
no
better
doubt.
Team. The Raiders should win this game. But you go east Sunday night, you're in Washington. Going to be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, it is. And the Raiders have played well on the road. I mean, last year starting out in that late call that you're thinking, oh, my God, he's going for two. And they were able to pull games out. So this is a team. And I want to say I'm going to call it the Marshawn Lynch effect. I mean, the confidence and the swagger that he brings to a team that already had some of that. The only question, and it's been the question all along, Grant, is what are they going to do on the defensive side of the ball? And if they are able to slow Washington down, you got to think, what did they score last week? They scored 45 points, 42 points against the Jets. You know they can put up points. So that means that Washington is going to have to put some points up to beat these guys. We're going to give our predictions, but I see the Raiders getting this one.
All right, Lincoln Kennedy will be on with us to talk about the Raiders. We've got a lot going on today. Willie Cauley-Stein in studio at 4. Link will be on with us at 4:30. Chris Landry at 5. Matt Barrows from the Sacramento Bee at 6:15. The Niners at home tomorrow at Levi to take on the Rams. Your Thursday Night Football, and as Doug just went down and listed, you know, the injuries for the 49ers and the guys that, you know, will not be playing. I don't have a good read on the Rams. Good week one, not too good in week two. You know, as Doug said, Eric Reed and Reuben Foster will not play tomorrow. I just don't know whether the Niners can score enough to win a game. That's really what it boils down to.
It does. And what I guess when you look at McVay and you look at Goff is he's played better. And I guess it's easy to play better than what he did last year for a lot of the season.
He made a horrendous interception at the end of the game.
Yes, which obviously is not good. So what do you expect from him? But you pair that with a defense that has some guys out, that first-year coach, all these different things. Could he go for a big game? He's back. He went to Cal, so he's back in the Bay Area. You just don't know.
All right. Now, if you look at this from the Rams, tight end Gerald Everett, cornerback Kayvon Webster, running back Malcolm Brown are all questionable. Everett was limited in practice yesterday. Webster and Brown not able to practice at all this week. So, well, you know, we'll see. You know, again, neither of these teams, I don't think, are very good. If I'm looking at this game, I'm looking at the Rams and saying I think they're just slightly better.
I would think so. And I would probably pair that starting with quarterback, because it looks like Goff is turning out maybe to be the type of quarterback that can maybe lead this franchise going forward. So let's also look at Gurley, Grant.
Yes.
The fact that last year running the football, he was going, you know, they were just stopping him. Now they've started to pass it out of the backfield. He's getting one-on-one matchups, and all of a sudden, I want to say the number is 8 catches for 107 yards or something like that, which for a back, that's some pretty good numbers.
And this is a big game for Jared Goff, because if you remember the embarrassing situation, and he didn't say it was embarrassing, but it was. He wasn't even in uniform for the opening game last year.
Clipboard.
Here's a guy that played at Cal who's from the area and wasn't even in uniform. So, you know, on top of everything else, this is a big game. I expect Aaron Donald, who was rusty last week, to play. Even though it's a short week, I expect him to be a little bit more in his game tomorrow, which could be an issue for the 49ers. I just look at this game in Santa Clara tomorrow. I think it's just I think it's a close game.
Yeah, I think in the more that we talk about it, Grant, as we leaning more towards the Rams, you know, when you talk about running back, obviously, if you're going to be able to pass the ball to Gurley out of the backfield, and he's going to be able to produce things like that, I think that helps them. Quarterback, you talk about Donald. The Rams may get this one, but I agree with you. It should be a close one.
Yeah, and the Rams are going to go back to their color rush jerseys. You know, it's Thursday Night Football, and you will not be able. Yeah, I'm showing Doug right now. You won't be able to. You'll know who the Rams are tomorrow when you're watching the game.
No doubt. Carlos Hyde, have to give him some love, though.
Yeah,
he's played well, and
it's a good back.
Yeah, and I think that's paired with Shanahan's offense and the way that he takes advantage of the guys who he has at his disposal.
All right, so we got NFL to talk about. The Kings start training camp on Tuesday, media day on Monday. Doug and I will be out there on Monday to bring you not only the complete rundown on what you saw this Sunday in the NFL, but we'll also have some Kings players on the show between 3 and 5, as Doug and I will be at the practice facility on Monday. I still cannot believe, and it's the reason why I say that is because the season is starting so much earlier this year.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, wow, we got media day next week on Monday and practice starts Tuesday.
Absolutely crazy, man. I mean, you and I watching practice or just them scrimmaging actually was awesome, because you're starting to get that vibe. You see what's going on. And now when you make it official, it just takes it to another level. Got so many things. Baseball playoffs are about to come. And now you got football every Sunday. And then on Saturday, you got college football, and now the NBA. Oh man, it's a sports fan's dream.
Somebody wanted to know if I had any information on Sam Bradford playing this week. I don't. I've told you this in the past. I'll say it again. This is the type of guy that gets hurt getting out of the shower in the morning. So, you know, I'm not all bets are off when it comes to Sam Bradford.
You know, because, Grant, there's nothing that would have said he wasn't going to play
right.
last weekend. I mean, being injured is you know, or let me see. There's a difference between being injured and being hurt. Hurt.
Yep.
When you're injured,
different.
You're out. I thought he was hurt and he would be out there. But him not playing, wow, at the quarterback position, that's big.
Yeah, and he said it was a non-contact issue. You know, and again, this is a guy that's had a lot of injuries. You know, he had an ACL in his left knee in both 2013 and 2014. You know, he had surgeries to repair the ligament. And it's, again, I just don't have any faith in this guy lining up every Sunday. I just don't.
Well, they're going to be in a boatload of trouble because when they protect him and he's able to distribute the ball, he can throw the football. But
yep.
the point is, if you can't stay on the field, what do you say? You can't make the club if you're in the tub.
Right. You can't make the club if you're in the tub. Right?
All-time stuff, man.
All right. So, you know, again, you get back to week three. That begins tomorrow night with the Rams and the 49ers. It ends on Monday night. With Dallas at Arizona, both those teams at 1-1. Cardinals have looked horrible in both games. They were lucky to win at the Colts. Carson Palmer looks awful. I've always said you're not winning with Carson Palmer. I think the Cowboys will get a road win here. We'll give all of our picks on Friday, but we're highlighting some of the games this week in the National Football League. I think Atlanta at Detroit is an interesting week three matchup.
Yes.
I think it's going to be interesting. I think when you look at Seattle at Tennessee, Tennessee had that stinker in week one. They bounced back, did what they had to do on the road. I don't know about Seattle yet. I'm going to find out more about them. Cincinnati 0-2, but the Packers have a lot of injuries. But the Bengals didn't even score a touchdown at home in their first two games. And so there are some interesting games. And then you have a divisional game in the AFC West, Kansas City at the Chargers.
Oh, boy. I like that one. I've been bullish, but, you know, on the Chargers, but they shoot themselves, miss a field goal to win the game. When you talk about divisional games, Grant, this early, it gets awesome because you don't want to get behind like you were talking about with your New York Giants that being 0-2 and everyone else.
They
in
lose
the division,
their season's over.
Yeah.
They're not. If they lose, their season's over. 0-2 you can bounce back from. And matter of fact, the Giants in 2007 started 0-2 and they won the Super Bowl. You're not coming back from 0-3.
Yeah.
They're not good enough to do that.
Yeah, and also, what we're finding is, you mentioned it, there are some good teams that haven't played well.
That's correct.
What are we going to find out about the Detroit Lions this week?
Yep.
Because they are facing an absolutely good team that went to the Super Bowl, has a hangover, came back,
yep.
but they haven't seemed to lose their rhythm. But Detroit playing some good football, supposedly against the competition, though, what will they do yep. against an Atlanta team?
All right. Doug and I will take the break. Again, Willie Cauley-Stein in studio at 4 o'clock right here on Sports 1140 KHDK. There was an incident at Yankee Stadium today, which once again brings up the question, will Major League Baseball parks expand the screen that is currently behind the backstop to extend towards the dugouts to prevent what was a very disturbing, sad scene today, when a toddler got hit in the face
no.
with a line drive. And if you don't think that this has been a topic of debate in the past, it has. And I will tell you that in the National Hockey League, there had been debate about putting a screen up behind the goals up above the glass. And unfortunately, they waited too long. And a young teenage girl lost her life at a Columbus Blue Jackets game because she got hit with a puck. And after that, it became mandatory in all NHL arenas to put a screen up behind the glass, behind the goal and around the corners to prevent that type of tragedy from occurring. Now, there has been no report, to the best of my knowledge, on the condition of the little girl at Yankee Stadium. But if you were watching the game or you saw reports, Matt Holliday was crying at second base. The players were on a knee. You know, it wasn't just like someone got hit. I mean, the players knew the severity of what had happened immediately, and it was and again, you first and foremost, you just hope that this little girl is going to be okay. But do not be surprised, and this has happened in the past, but I hope that we don't have to have a fan lose their life before baseball figures out a way to protect the fans in the stands.
Absolutely, Grant. I had to look, and that is bad from a lot of different standpoints. And I think the NBA, this is something that they have to look at, because I've seen women who are pregnant in the front row of an NBA game. I've seen children in the front row of an NBA game. And you are absolutely in the field of play when you are there. But
you know, in all fairness, and I will say this, if a woman is pregnant, she should not be sitting in the front row of any sporting event. And she should have enough sense and or friends that would tell her it's not worth it. Okay, now I would say that. I don't know what the NBA could do to protect their customers in the front row. I don't really know what they could do.
I don't either. That's a good question. The one thing that I will say a lot of the times is I've seen so many players jump over, and
yes,
to their credit, but sometimes the people in the second row, and obviously,
yes,
the further you get away, the velocity of the body, the ball, whatever it is, begins to slow down. But it is something that when you talk about baseball, Grant, you have to make sure. I mean, they chart everything. You know where the balls are going, how often they go, and you got to make sure that you protect your patrons.
You know, again, getting hit with a line drive is a little bit different than having an NBA player run into you. I'm not saying it's different in the sense of you have time to react, because you know what? You don't have time to react, but you might be injured. You're probably not going to get killed from that. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, I've seen Shaq come that way.
Oh, boy.
And, oh, my goodness. I mean, let's put it in perspective, Grant. I've seen Shaq come towards the bench of the players, and players move out of the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, fans are
Oh, yeah. Listen, it's happened to me when I'm broadcasting a game, and I have moved out of the way. But sometimes you don't have time.
Chance.
But I can, you know, you see it, and you're like, oh, my gosh. You know, a loose ball is coming right near where we are, and I have moved out of the way before. But you know what? Sometimes if you're sitting on the baseline,
yeah,
and a player's going in for a layup and gets fouled, and their trajectory is changed. If you don't have enough, or a player that is going after a loose ball, and you're sitting there, and that you realize there's really not much you can do. Well, just got to hope for the best.
Yeah, and the NBA is taking it a step further, because there are so many different press people there that my knee blew a camera up one time, and
I still have
the mark.
Arco was the worst arena in the league for that. Now the new Golden One Center.
There's more space.
Yes. The Arco was the worst venue in the league for players and photographers.
I want your take on what does football end up doing? Because I see so many older coaches, linesmen, they absolutely get taken down. I've seen knees get blown out.
They consider it part of the risks of the job that you do. That's what they do.
Wow.
Now, the NBA, they changed. I've been at these meetings, and so I can tell you this. It was... 2 or 3 years ago,
okay,
the NBA changed. They call them escape lanes.
Okay.
Right? So underneath the basket where a player would go in for a layup and their momentum would keep on going, they now have what they call escape lanes. And there's no one that's allowed. If you notice, if you go to an NBA court, there are lines back there where photographers have to be within that box, those lines. And so the NBA has tried their very best to make it as safe as possible for their players.
And you really have to think about that. You remember Paul George broke his leg.
On the basketball stanchion.
And when you allow those lanes to be there, in all intents and purposes, Grant, that's money. Because those are seats that you could have there. But to the NBA's credit, man, as much as you can do to protect your patrons, you have to do it. And you said it, Grant. Baseball really has to look into this one.
And again, there's been no due to the circumstances of this situation at Yankee Stadium today, and the law prohibits any information coming out of the hospital unless the family of the little girl wants the information released.
Yeah.
In other words, that you can't call up and ask, what's the condition of so-and-so? The hospital's not allowed under law to give it to you.
And you know, some people say, why didn't you grab it? It happened so fast.
If you saw the replay,
yeah,
there was, and you're talking about a toddler.
Yeah.
All right, and if you're talking about, you know, and again, I've always, and I mean this, I've been fortunate the last couple times to sit closer to the field than I normally do, and I was at Yankee Stadium 2 years ago, and we were sitting three rows off the field, and I told my wife, and we were with a group of people, I said, you know what? I go, if you're going to be on your phone, don't be on your phone when the pitcher's getting ready to pitch.
Yes, sir.
Because you can get killed, and I really mean that. And we were right in line. I said, don't even, I said, you watch the pitcher, and if the pitcher starts to wind up, don't be on your phone.
No, because and if you hear the crack of the bat, the next thing that you might be seeing is someone standing over you saying, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Because, man.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
All right, let's get to Zach. Hello, Zach.
Hey, Grant. How's it going?
Good.
I think you kind of already touched on this point, but in a general sense between basketball, football, and baseball, it seems like if you took a screenshot of the stadium at any given time during a baseball game, there are also so many people not paying attention.
Correct.
That's a huge difference between the sports. But
no question about that. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, and you see it all the time when you're watching TV. And oftentimes you think every time a foul ball goes into the stadium, you're like, oh, look how many people aren't paying attention to that thing.
No doubt.
Yeah. That's it's scary, Zach. You look down and all of a sudden you look up and somebody's down. Think about, I don't know what the number is, Grant, but in every single baseball game, think of how many foul balls are.
Well, it's a lot worse now than it ever used to be because of cell phones.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to any sporting event, hockey, football, baseball, basketball, fans are on their cell phones all the time. Well, if they're on their cell phones, that means they're not watching the game.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the catalyst there. And it's tragic, but thanks for letting me chime in, guys.
Thank you. Don't forget, Willie Cauley Stein at 4 o'clock in studio. We'll take the break here on Sports 1140. All right, don't forget, Willie Cauley Stein will be in studio coming up at 4 o'clock. We take your phone calls at 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Raider fans, we've got Lincoln Kennedy. He'll talk about the upcoming trip to D.C., Sunday Night Football. Link will be with us at 4:30. Chris Landry from LandryFootball.com at 5. And Matt Barrows will chime in as the 49ers are at home tomorrow at Levi's Stadium, taking on the Rams Thursday Night Football. NBA, again, I don't know if you believe in the rumor mill or not, but one thing that we do know is if you are looking at the movement this offseason in the NBA, it has been very significant. And you have Paul George going to Oklahoma City. You have Chris Paul going to Houston. You've got Kyrie Irving going to Boston. You've got Isaiah Thomas going to Cleveland. And we're waiting on Carmelo Anthony. Well, according to the New York Daily News and Frank Isola, Melo will be traded by Monday.
Come on.
Well, I'm just telling you what he says.
You're putting a date on it? Come on, Grant. You know better than that. I don't believe that. Now, will he get traded? I definitely think there is a lot of conversation out there. And if I was the Knicks, I probably would keep it a little more quiet. Or maybe their strategy is to kind of drum up some interest, so maybe they're able to get more than maybe what has been offered so far with all of the craziness that was going on with Phil Jackson. But if it's Monday, I would be highly surprised.
The headline in the New York Daily News: Kings need Carmelo Anthony gone and Kristaps Porzingis here. That's the headline.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue with that part. You're talking about an aging veteran, probably a gun for hire scorer that can absolutely put the ball in the bucket, and you're talking about a young budding star. Yeah, you want to keep that young star in New York, and you want to get what you can for the aging hired gun.
Now, as of 5:46 Eastern time, Frank Isola wrote that barring an 11th-hour deal, Melo will remain with the Knicks next week when the team holds their annual media day to tip off the start of training camp. And assuming that he is there, and I believe he will, just like you will, can you just imagine what that media day is going to be like with Carmelo Anthony?
Yeah, the circus is coming in to New York early, Grant.
Right.
You know how they have all the animals in the back there, right? It's going to be one big giant circus. There will be nothing talked about New York basketball. It's everything about Carmelo. And I would think that is not what you want or how you want to start the season.
Frank Isola talking about, you know, this whole situation. I'll read an excerpt from a story today. But this is how the Knicks have always operated. The dysfunction starts on day one and picks up speed once the season starts. Last year, Derrick Rose missed most of the preseason while attending a sexual assault trial in Los Angeles. This year, training camp could be hijacked by the uncertainty surrounding the team's two best players, Carmelo and Kristaps Porzingis.
Sounds about right, Grant. Yep. It seems that ever since, I would go back maybe even to Pat Riley, when he faxed his resignation into the Knicks, it's been one kind of circus after another there with no stability, and there hasn't been a lot of success.
This summer, where was Kristaps Porzingis? He was back in his homeland. Where was Carmelo Anthony? He was nowhere near the Knicks practice facility.
He had a hood on.
Yeah. And I only say that, and it's, by the way, it's not unusual for players to go work out where they're from or what have you. And we'll talk to Willie Cauley-Stein about this in a couple of minutes. That's why, I mean, it's been so phenomenal to see how many of the Kings players have been here since really August 1st on almost a daily basis, voluntarily. They don't have to be here, but they have been here.
Yeah, you and I talked about this, and we were talking about it with the guys, is throughout my whole career, rarely did I see, I would say maybe six. I'm talking 3-on-3, mostly 2-on-2, maybe with an extra player, guys getting some work in. And rarely did they ever really get together until maybe that week right before. And I say week, I mean like 3 or 4 days right before training camp started, get in and you would get some 5-on-5 up. But these guys have been here consistently. It speaks to their level of commitment, but it also speaks to the culture that's being built.
All right. Again, Willie Cauley-Stein in just a little bit. 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Something else I wanted to mention to you today. Joel Embiid. We saw him last year and we were just like, wow, right?
Yeah.
Then he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that the Sixers came out today and said that Joel Embiid still has not been cleared for 5-on-5 drills? That to me is, I mean, it's almost October.
Yeah. Well, you know, he had a torn meniscus. And for people who maybe don't know what a meniscus is, it's like the shock absorber between your between your knees. And to be that big and move the way that he is able to move, I don't know if they trimmed it. Did they stitch it up?
I don't know.
That information isn't given. But, Grant, I will say this. That is highly alarming.
Yes,
highly.
All right, Willie Cauley-Stein, we'll talk to him coming up in studio. Don't go anywhere because that's coming up next right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.